present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the special election edition of the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Times read by Corrie Caulfield.
Studying a photograph of people being threatened during a bank raid, Judge Herbert Dunn asked at the Old Bailey, which one is the robber? The prosecution replied, the man in the tracksuit who is holding a gun, my lord.
Thanks to the very many of you who sent that one in. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Fred McCauley. Opposite them on my left, Francis Ween and Linda Smith. Jeremy, who gives a damn?
Oh, now I know this. It's been a very disappointing night for the Conservatives. Incidentally, this programme is recorded in February. I'm surprised so many people could be asked to turn up. In fact, roughly twice as many people in the population are interested in skittish Radio 4 panel games as they are in the process of democracy. which is encouraging. It's been a very disappointing night for the Tories, because by the time they get back into power, there'll be nothing left to privatise. So they're all pretty sad. Mandelson, he's gone a little bit strange. Mandelson made this bizarre speech, and halfway through, you could hear the audience there at the count going, "Ooh, what's she like?" And because he was not graceful in victory, Mandelson. He was like,
"They said they could defeat me, but I am invincible." You poor fool. I have the Mandelsonian crystals now. I cannot be beaten. I rule the galaxy.
I mean, and then under his breath, you could hear him going, "Oh, I've got this annoying paper cut in my finger."
I voted for the Socialist Alliance. May as well say, tell you now. Now it's over. But there's a very low turnout. And the annoying thing is people keep saying, well, it's because of apathy. It's not apathy. The people are just miserable and disaffected. They know they've got two identical parties and they're miserable about it. And the Labour says, well, it's because of satisfaction and contentment. People are just so happy. You're going to vote, darling? Vote? I'm so happy I'm too embarrassed to get out of bed. I don't think I could squeeze into a polling booth. I'm so happy. People are miserable. They're not happy. That's why they're not voting. They know it doesn't make any difference anymore. So it's time to smash some windows. So after this, we'll all go down to Gap, all right? It's the only thing that's going to make any difference anymore.
You've got so little confidence, Jeremy. What about Selfridges?
Oh, yes, they've got a nice salt beef bar there.
I know what you mean, though. But I mean, I couldn't find anyone to vote for on my list. I had to waste my vote on some silly old biddy from the Green Party. He's probably jumping up and down now, having got one vote. Probably putting on her celebration dress made of corn, I imagine.
You're probably the only person that voted for the Socialist Alliance that knows where the best salt beef bar is.
No. I think you'll find the Socialist Alliance tough on bad sandwiches, tough on the cause of bad sandwiches.
Got to tell you, I was undecided on my way to the polling booth, and I decided my strategy would be that I'd wait, and whatever the last sign that I saw strapped to a lamppost would be, that's who I would vote for. So I went into the polling booth and arsed around for a few minutes and then leaned down and said, "Excuse me, whereabouts in this slip of paper is Urban Clearway?"
It's the second Labour landslide. Tony Blair asked the electorate to give him two terms, and by the end of the night, they had smug and supercilious. In Hartlepool's, the voters faced a choice between Peter Mandelson and Arthur Scargill, making it the only constituency in the country where the monster-raving loony candidate was the safe pair of hands. 2 points to Jeremy. Fred, listen to this.
Don't be a hero. Don't be a fool with your lies. Don't be a hero.
Come back and make me your wife.
Fred, which Billy decided he was no longer a hero?
This is, of course, the real Will Hagee, who's decided... He's the real Will Hagee and he's "Please Standing Down," in the words of Eminem. I think that was Smokey, wasn't it? Was it Smokey that sang that?
No, Paper Lace.
Paper Lace. Oh, my apologies, Simon. I wasn't paying attention in the 70s.
You don't get points.
They're not? All right.
No.
Is this not the pop quiz?
No.
All right. I thought that was Jamie Theakston sitting next to me. But, yes, Wee Willie's gone off to have another 14 pints. But he has been sleeping with a headhunter, so I think he's got a fair chance of picking up a new post someplace.
He's been sleeping with a headhunter?
Oh,
does Fionn know about this? I suppose if you had a head like William Hague's, you would want someone to shrink it, though, for you. Apparently he was being comforted at home by Sebastian Coe.
I think even as we speak, they're reenacting that scene from Women in Love.
He looked as emotional as he possibly could when he was, you know, thanking everybody for their support. And then he turned and touched Fionn. And the channel I was listening to, you could actually hear it going...
But he could very well say he was resigning to spend more time with his family, which is the usual thing. So he's been yoked at the hip to her, hasn't he, throughout this campaign. And she hasn't said one word, but she ought to be the next leader. She's much better. And also she's more popular than him without ever making a speech.
Yes, because if she spoke, she'd say something like, "Good morning, campers." Heidi, hi.
All gone now. She's got to marry Portillo.
Well, it could be Ian Duncan Smith. You don't know. God. Very excited about the Ian Duncan Smith candidacy. He's being talked up already as the favourite. And he's my doppelganger. I keep getting mistaken for him, so it's going to be good news for me. It's a side income. Because I've actually...
You'll be the one who gets shot, won't you?
Well, I will.
That's how lost the Tories are, that the only thing they can think of is, maybe if we had a leader with more names, that might help.
Actually, I was at the BBC TV centre last night, and I was a bit tired. I had to get up early and water me delphinium, so I went home. But at one point, there was Anne Widdecombe, who is tiny. She's just like a Tory, only much smaller. And Michael Portillo and Lord Tebbit, all in the same room. And I thought, God, dear, you stay up late enough, the dead start walking.
In his resignation speech, Mr. Hague confirmed he would be acting as caretaker leader until the party conference in October, and acting as a caretaker thereafter. He says... He's told friends he's now looking for a career with better long-term prospects and has applied for the vacancy of King of Nepal. 2 points to Fred. Linda, whose victory was just what the doctor ordered?
Aha, this is this splendid man in Kidderminster, this Dr. Taylor, who on the platform of saving the local hospital, not closing the hospital... has won an amazing victory, a huge majority, about 17,000 or something, completely trounced the Labour MP, who was in fact a junior health minister, I believe, ironically enough. So what does that tell you? And of course, he will be an MP who can actually have a surgery, so that's so that's one good thing. But this is so arrogant, New Labour, that what they'll learn from this is they won't think, this means the fact that people will elect this doctor, who's not a politician of any kind, because he's going to campaign to save the hospital. They won't think, perhaps we should save hospitals. They'll think, that's what we need, more doctors as candidates. If we could get Scottish doctors, that would be even better. They seem even more reliable.
Labour voters were so contented, they thought, we'll vote against the candidate because they're so happy with Labour's team. We'll vote for somebody else who's standing in opposition.
Save Kidderminster Hospital Party already has 18 seats on the local council. Doctors and nurses have plenty more time to get involved in politics now that Kidderminster Hospital is closed. Francis, who's the most popular leader in the UK? And the clue is, he's Swedish.
Aha. This was the week's good result. England played a football game and won it. Under Sven-Göran Eriksson, this chap. And... because we had a cricket match, which we lost, I think, and then there was the election, which everyone lost. But dear old Beckham, Bex, led us to this tremendous victory over... I mean, admittedly, it was only Greece, but still, you know, it's a start. It's a bit like the Tories having 10 more seats than they had last time. They've got to go somewhere, and in about 100 years, England might win the World Cup if they carry on this rate. They played a football match and won. Hot news, eh?
Oh, it is. I think you've won 5 in a row, haven't you? It's just...
Well, I haven't, no.
No, no, they...
I was left on the bench for the last few months, but... somebody has. But most of those were against Albania and Moldova, probably. Or was that Tony Hawk's?
Yes, after years of post-match analysis from Hoddle and Keegan, it makes a change to listen to a manager who has a grasp of the English language. 2 points to Francis. We start round two with a cutting from the obituary columns of last year.
Dr. Alex Comfort, author of The Joy of Sex, has died after a series of strokes.
That's a Dr. Kelly show for that. Jeremy, why is a safe existence far from a cosy one?
Well, Freddie's scribbling for me. Freddie's scribbling. Accidents. Oh, yeah. Accidents in the home. There are all these things. They built a report of all the things that cause accidents, but they didn't tell us how. And it just makes you wonder, because whenever you, like, tea cosies, loafers, all these things that cause accidents. Because if you ever spend, you know, an evening with three or four nurses, I mean, in your dreams, but I mean... In a social situation, they will start telling you these apocryphal stories about people who came into casualty. And it's like that game where you say, my auntie went shopping and she bought a hat. The next person says, my auntie went shopping and she bought a hat and a coat. And the nurses will say, someone was brought into casualty and we removed from him a billiard cue. The next one says, someone was brought into casualty and we removed from him a billiard cue and a light bulb. Someone was brought into casualty and we removed a billiard cue, a light bulb and a bust of Napoleon. On it goes. And sometimes it's Beethoven, but pretty much the same sort of head size and that. But they don't tell you how these loofah accidents, you know, I fell onto my loofah as I was getting out of the bar. Sebastian, I don't know.
But they did. They did actually. They said because there were 6,000 trouser-related accidents last year. And those ones, they said, one of them was a woman who burnt herself while she was ironing her trousers because she hadn't taken them off beforehand.
Have they explained the tea cosy one?
I think it's the same as the trousers. Basically, if you can't shove it up yourself, you'll trip over it.
And socks. Socks are almost as a bigger hazard as trousers, I think, didn't it, say?
It's a miracle we're here, really, isn't it?
It's like this thing your grandfather would always say, a swan could break your arm, but you never see them do it, do you? Mounting the bank and grabbing some old lady with breadcrumbs and shoving her arm up.
I think we should go down to casualty department and see how many people have had an eye out with something. I mean, everybody gets taught, what, you'll have your eye out with that.
And if anyone ever died with chewing gum winding itself around their heart?
Socks must be people drowning from putting too many in their trunks.
Almost 1,000 accidents were attributed in the report to badly fitting tights, proving that Tchaikovsky didn't call his ballet the Nutcracker for nothing. Fred, who failed to go down a storm when put to the test this week?
I'm not saying I don't know.
Is it storm as in the tempest?
It
storm?
Is, exactly.
Oh, is this... they got taught the wrong Shakespeare play?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That'll do.
Scottish people are very economical, aren't they?
Yes, I think We only study the one Scottish play, the one Shakespeare play, sorry, bit of a Scottish Freudian slip there. We read...
You sheep read in your country.
I think some A-level students were taught the wrong, or they studied the wrong Shakespeare play for their English exam, and the headmasters... committed harakiri or...
Posh school in Bath. A brilliant thing was this band was into...
They're all posh schools in Bath.
Well, obviously. Some of them are underwater, though. Those Latin ones. But this bloke, he said, this is terrible. This school cost me a fortune to send my children to. And you think, no, hang on, you've got something... Secondary education's free, mate. You've got something wrong here. I think you want to check this out with your school. But The thing is, what I was always told with an exam is, if the wrong thing comes up, you answer the question. Like Blair, you answer the question that you are prepared to answer. The question is about the Tempest, but you say, I don't think people want me to answer these rehashed questions about Prospero. What they really want to know is, does Hamlet feign madness in order to procrastinate? Is he genuinely traumatized?
Which is the answer I'd love to have given.
It's the pupils of King Edward's School, Bath, who, after revising Shakespeare's Hamlet, found that the questions in their A-level exam were actually about the Tempest. The two subjects could hardly be more different. The Tempest is a complex story, seen as a metaphor for Shakespeare's own battle with age and the waning of his powers, contrasting with the optimism of the youthful, innocent Miranda against her father Prospero's increasing cynicism, whereas Hamlet is a cigar. Linda, who is on track for a breakup?
Is there some sort of bylaw in here that every week there's a rail track question?
Cause yes.
I seem to get one every week. But, well, this is, they're doing rather poorly, the shares, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. They've
kicked off the FTSE 100, haven't they?
Whoa. Really?
Yeah.
What does that mean, exactly? Oh, very quiet now. Explain that to me, please, right. Francis.
They lost so much.
You can use graphs, all right. I don't mind.
No, they had sort of 350 million wiped off their value, and so the overseers, the FTSE 100, said you're not fit to be on our list anymore, and chucked them off, and Next has taken their place.
Next is running the rail system.
Apparently so.
They should have some nice, easy
you
care.
You wouldn't understand about these things. It's high finance. Don't you worry your pretty little head. It's a...
A girl like myself shouldn't be worrying her head about that. Not questioning a gentleman like yourself, Mr. Ween. Indeed, she shouldn't. Buy a bunch of violets. Yes, apparently they're just going right down the tubes. It seems an ideal opportunity to sort of renationalise it, really. And people
why renationalise it when you could just keep throwing public money at them and rather than have a safe railway system, just have trains fitted with seatbelts? It's good when all the track maintenance is done by people like Balfour Beatty, who think that the expression paper over the cracks should be taken literally. Balfour Beatty's minds are on higher things like flooding Kurdish villages. They've got no time for trifles like tracks.
Jerry, which company would be lying if they said they weren't resurrecting something they'd found at the back of their wardrobe?
Oh, this is boring.
Okay.
Not doing the programme. I'm happy enough to carry on with that in the meantime. No, the story, it's apparently the Chronicles of Narnia is all an allegory for the Bible. Now, since the Bible is an allegory, I think that's a bit pointless, really. Well, I say that. I mean, the parables and that, they're meant to be allegorical. You're not meant to think, really, that's true. That was all in the paper, that, about that Samaritan. It's allegorical sort of stuff there, you see, and all biblical stuff is based on pagan and Celtic myths. This lion is meant to represent Jesus, and the witch woman is meant to represent Satan or the Ayatollah Khomeini or John Burt or something like that. And all the horrid little spoilt children are meant to represent sort of Cliff Richard and Delia Smith and various sort of umptuous Christians like that. But,
so what's the wardrobe then?
And in England, you see... We buy a little house for our clothes.
No.
Using the new metal pound notes. Which we spend freely.
Thank God it's radio. Red am I? Yeah.
HarperCollins have angered C.S. Lewis devotees over their plans to reprint the Narnia novels without any reference to Christianity. Of course, you can't really come out of the wardrobe and escape into a magical fantasy land, as Michael Barrymore discovered on Wednesday. Narnia is a magical kingdom where horses fly, lions talk, and where the bread for Indian restaurants is made.
All right, we've all had a drink.
Fred, what could prove to be a bitter pill for wine lovers to swallow?
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, we know.
They not know.
No. That's
Fred. Fred, you're bloody useless.
Fred, the French
Francis,
the French wine makers are producing, because red wine is thought to be good for you, for your heart, they're producing these red wine pills so you can get all the benefits.
At last, an end to glass of wine misery.
But it's one of these sort of brilliant modern inventions that removes the entire point of the exercise by sort of taking all the enjoyment out of it, just dunking it down. It's like alcohol-free lager or socialism-free labour. Pleasure-free sex.
I don't know about that. They wouldn't dare publish that story in Scotland. None of the Scottish editions can.
Well, they called it electric soup or something up there, don't they? They don't know what wine is. There.
How do you swallow the pill? Do you have
premium lager?
A dried water tablet with you? Are they going to have champagne pills? It'll be like those nice fizzy vitamin C drinks you get. Well, you can get wine gums. You save yourself a fortune. Pick out the red ones. Those yellow ones that give you that nasty George Best complexion, though.
Wine pills are aimed at the health-conscious drinker, while the upcoming woodpecker cider pills are aimed at the unconscious drinker. Same French company.
Woodpecker tablets are Viagra, aren't they?
Two points to Francis. Linda, listen to this. William Hague, live from Richmond. Free Falling by Tom Petty. Linda, which newlyweds patch things up after having a terrible falling out?
Ah. Now, this isn't Fiona and William.
No.
No. Oh. Ah, now, ha-ha.
Aha.
It's not these skydiver people, is it? Oh, this is horrible, because they got really badly hurt.
So it'll be fun when it's on you've been framed. Oh, they don't just have kids drowning in paddling pools. They have all kinds of jolly stuff on there.
This is, isn't it? It's this married couple who had this sort of parachute wedding, and they jumped out of the plane, and the parachutes didn't work. So they were left really basically clinging on to something that was... Well, just shreds of just, I don't know, like Anne Widdecombe's bloomers, just completely ineffectual, billowing about, and then they just plummeted to rather horrible injuries.
Yes.
Ha ha ha!
Was this a presentless parachute? They should have done the John Lewis list, really, shouldn't they?
Should have done.
Maybe they did the C.S. Lewis list, and it's an allegory. That's your life, mate. The parachute's not going to open like you want it to.
I suppose it was a good chat-up line for the best man with the bridesmaids, wasn't it? Come on, we're all going to die anyway. Come on. Go on.
Did the whole wedding party jump out of a plane then? Was it a free-fall wedding?
No, Kevin, just then.
Oh, just then.
The vicar wasn't there, no. Newlyweds Kevin and Bev McElwee, who survived falling 13,000 feet following a disastrous honeymoon parachute jump.
Oh, I hate it when that happens, don't you? Disastrous honeymoon parachute jump.
A number of things were broken in the fall, including Kevin's legs, Beverly's shin bone, and the 52-piece matching crockery set.
To say, I put my shoulder out in my honeymoon diving off the wardrobe.
That's because you didn't know what it was for, isn't it? Keep your hand up on the last thing for your day.
2 points to Linda. Francis, why have the police been accused of acting suspiciously?
Of acting? This isn't the one about the flatulence, is it?
No, it isn't. So it's 1 point for getting that right.
That's all right. This is the one about the speed cameras, then, probably, is it?
No. We know.
No, it's all right.
We know. 2 points to us.
Real cops have been turning up on the bill.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, actors have been going out arresting people.
You can see why policemen would want to be on the bill, though, because that way they get to solve crimes, not shoot unarmed people, and arrest people without smothering them to death.
Or without breaking wind in their hall.
Would you like to answer that one, Francis?
Well, would you like to explain these cryptic comments you've given?
An official investigation and disciplinary thing going on at Scotland Yard because some policemen raided a woman's flat in Essex looking for drugs. And according to, she lodged a complaint because one of them broke wind in her hall and didn't apologise. And so...
looking for drugs? They're probably looking for Andrews, weren't they? Windies.
So this cop farted in the hall?
Yeah, but they don't know which one it was. So there are about six policemen who are now under suspicion.
I think they can find that out quite easily. I think they'll find that he who denied it supplied it.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
Oh, this was sent in by my deputy headmaster of Vun Grammar School, where I went when I was young and pretty and had the figure of a young girl. And, whose name is John McLaughlin, but I still call him Mr. McLaughlin, because you have to, really, because he's Sir. Anyway, this is from Cheeky Guide to Brighton, and it's the listings bit of saunas. Ambassador's Sauna and Massage. This highly rated five-star sauna with a jacuzzi offers a full range of services, including more unusual massages. Private parties can be catered for, and in summer there's an outdoor massage facility. Like Sainsbury's, they have a reward card system. Save enough points and you can have a free two-girl Swedish massage or a digital watch.
My one's from Mandy Pierce, who I didn't go to school with, and it's about what's going on in Exeter. There's a junior tennis competition in Teignmouth, and then from the 10th to the 16th, and this lets you see the importance of spelling, there is an open bowels tournament. And that, presumably, is somewhere on the village green, I don't know.
Linda.
Oh, this was sent in by Doctors Vizhak and Cottam from the Northwest Evening Mail. Join nightclub licensee Michael Moore has been given the go-ahead to host striptease afternoons, but councillors warn they will be closely studying the shows.
Francis.
This is from The Times. A policewoman on the way to investigate a theft misheard a radio briefing about a missing fax and phone, and arrested a passerby carrying a saxophone.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Jeremy and Fred have fought a brave campaign and have come out with 12 points, but Linda and Francis are this week's landslide winners with 13. Before we leave, here's what's printed on the tickets issued by Berwick-upon-Tweed Borough Council at their 20p public conveniences.
Entry ticket for one person only. Non-transferable and non-refundable. Please retain this ticket ready for inspection during your visit.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news shows were Jeremy Hardy, Fred McCauley, Linda Smith and Francis Reed. The chairman was Simon Hoggard and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Bowles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.